Thanks, Tony, for calling and inviting me. This has really been a great session so far, and thank you all for sticking around or coming back or whatever. It's a nice room full right now. So I'm going to do my best to go through basically a summary of a series of three papers that have been published since 2006 on the impacts of trends in planting date and phenology on central USA corn productivity. So the motivation for doing this work really has been to develop a better understanding of the contributing factors to crop yield trends, management and climate, and how have these affected crop productivity over the years. And hopefully this information can advance our understanding of how changing planting dates, technological factors could work for or maybe against building resiliency in cropping systems to future climate change. So this really nice figure that I borrowed from Purdue, I think I don't have to belabor the point here about a lot of the reasons why maize yields have increased over the years, a lot of breeding and biotechnology factors, ability to stay green longer, a lot of management and technology factors, nitrogen fertilizers, irrigation, planting density has gone up. But could planting dates be contributing to this over the years? And then we obviously have the climate question and whether there have been changes in growing degree days during certain phenological stages that have promoted different cultivars to be planted and taking advantage of any change. So the objectives and questions here today, we're going to document the trends and calendar dates in those phenological stages, planting, silking, maturity, and harvest. Quantify changes in the length of the phenological stages, so not just when they're happening, but looking at how long those stages have been occurring and whether there's been any trends. Document changes in the growing degree days accumulated during specifically the vegetative and reproductive stages, and then have those changes contributed to yield trends and splitting that up in between the direct effects of planting earlier versus maybe a shift to longer season, later maturing cultivars. So there's four steps that I'm going to take you through today. We're going to utilize state-level USDA NAS crop progress data. This is an unbelievable, fabulous data set that I think has been underutilized to this point in time, although as we've seen, it is getting used more and more now, which is great. Too bad it doesn't go back a bit further. There are some states that do have planting date and other progress data that go back a bit further, but not back to like 1900 or 1860, unfortunately. We used a regression analysis to look at the correlation and regression between planting progress data and state-level corn yield trends. Has earlier planting been responsible for a portion of those yield trends? We analyzed daily climate data to quantify growing degree day trends. And then we used a lot of this information to drive an agroecosystem model that I've been a part of developing for about the last 15 years to try to tease apart whether it's direct impacts of planting earlier or is it due to growing degree day changes and maybe cultivar changes per se. So this is just an example from Wisconsin for corn planting progress data. There's a series of 5 years planted there. We use nonlinear splines to interpolate those to a daily basis so we can look at the 10% completed, 25%, 50%, and 75% completed thresholds for the four key phenological stages that we're interested in. So immediately upon looking at the data, you know, and I went into this not knowing really what was going to happen. It was just sort of curiosity. But there's obviously been a significant trend towards earlier planting during this 1979 to 2005 time frame. And this is the 10% planting date completed threshold. So this is about 4 to 5 degrees earlier per decade with quite a bit of variability, excuse me, from state to state. I don't know what's going on in Kentucky. Maybe some of you know better there, but they jumped out immediately over that time period of advancing their planting by 3 weeks earlier, all the way down to about a week or so in Michigan. And the only state that wasn't significant in this analysis was Ohio. If you average those over the whole Corn Belt and weight it by the amount of harvested area, you see that the linear trend adds up to about 0.4 days earlier per year. And that's relatively consistent depending on what planting completed threshold you look at, although there is a decline as you get later and later towards a higher threshold. And I won't go into the reasons why that's happening here. So what's going on here? Personally, and I wasn't able to have time to put in all the climate data analysis, but if you look at the onset of spring and certain temperature indicators that go well with when corn germinates and that, it really hasn't been due to an earlier arrival of spring, maybe a little bit in some regions, but it's really been due to probably an improvement in efficiency in the field and changes in agronomy per se, maybe adoption of no-till, changes in equipment and planting operations, seeds that can better withstand wetter and cooler soils, so you can plant a little bit earlier and not have to worry about those seeds being damaged. So the question I had was, how much has this really contributed to the advance in yields during that time frame? So I'm borrowing a technique that David Lobel published quite a bit on. It's called first differences. It's just taking the year-to-year changes in yield and then regressing those against the year-to-year changes in planting date over this time period. So remember, this is first differences. So if you look at the relationship between the year-to-year changes in corn yield and bushels per acre versus the year-to-year changes in the 10% planted completion date, you'll see that in general, when we tend to have an earlier planting date, you tend to get a higher amount of yield. If you have the reverse, the delay in planting, you get a reduction yield. Makes sense, I think, for everyone in the room that understands this. So if you take that information and play with statistics and make an assessment of how much those earlier planting trends have contributed to the yield trends, at least in this analysis on a state-by-state level, somewhere between 19 to 53% of the corn yield trends in those six states. Now, one thing to point out, in those six states where there was a significant trend, those tend to be on the northern and western fringes of the Corn Belt, so places that are generally cooler and don't accumulate quite as many growing degree days. In the other states that we analyzed, there was no significant correlation or contribution. So there's some questions that remain, though. So while that sheds some light on maybe what's been going on, how have the other phenological stages been changing, and have growing degree days accumulated during those phases changed also? So this is drawing on work that a former PhD student of mine published in 2011 in Ag and Forest Meteorology, where he said, "Hey, Chris, it's great what you did, but you kind of left some other information, you know, remaining out there that I think is worth going for." He also was adamant in choosing the 50% threshold. I use the 10%. When he did his statistics, he just felt that it was a little bit better indicator because it was a little bit later of a progress, I guess, more or less. So what's up here in these four panels is soybean is also actually plotted on these plots also. Those are the dotted lines. But so you have the 50% planted date trend in the solid lines on the lower left for corn. So there you have the significant trend towards earlier planting at about 0.4 days per year. In the upper right is the day when 50% of plants have reached the R1 stage. There was no significant trend in that for corn. The 50% maturity day in the lower left here for corn, no significant trend. And then the harvested date, while there might look to be a trend there for corn, it was not significant. So the actual dates of when these phases are occurring has not changed from this perspective except for the planting date. But you'll notice that there are slopes of lines that are going in different directions. And when you put those two together in regression analysis and look at the total change in days, things do become significant. So if you look at the total number of days changed from planted to R1, there's about a 6-degree lengthening of that time period. For from R to 1 to maturity, about an additional 6 days. The whole time period from planting to maturity has lengthened by about 12 days during that time period. And then the time period from maturity to harvest is actually shortened by about a week on average over the Corn Belt. And the soybean trends are plotted for your reference too. So if we look at growing degree day accumulation during those stages, some interesting things come out, and this was pointed out earlier in one of the talks in this session, that there's really been no change at all during the vegetative stage based on what we've seen here. But there has been a significant trend, about 3.7 degree days per year during the reproductive stage. So if you multiply that over the 25 years, it's maybe about 70 to 100 extra growing degree days of requirement during that time period. So to summarize the growing degree day changes, the growing degree days to reach maturity, or basically your typical cultivar, has gone up by about 5% or so. No change during the vegetative stage, about a 14% increase in the reproductive stage over those 25 years. And what's really interesting from this data is that back around 1980, grain fill started at about 60% of that total needed for maturity, but that's lessened to about 56% around the 2005 stage. So this definitely supports a trend towards the use of cultivars with a longer reproductive period and more GDDs required to be accumulated during that time frame. So what we decided to do was take advantage of the agroecosystem model that we've been working on in my group and now with a lot of other people at many land-grant universities in the Midwest, some of which are in this room, to try to feed those into an agroecosystem model to tease apart the impacts of just earlier planting itself, or has it been actual changes in selection of cultivars. And the way that we do that, for those of you that might be familiar with modeling, is to do a factorial combination. You do a control one where you keep sort of the planting date and the cultivars the same. You isolate the effects of the planting date by keeping the cultivars the same during the simulations, or vice versa. You change cultivars but keep planting dates on average the same, or you do a combination of changing both planting dates and selection of longer season cultivars. So that factorial combination, by subtracting, you know, one from others, allows us to isolate changes in management and or climate or the cultivar selection to isolate the impact of each. So this is the punchline. On the far right is the observed trend in bushels per acre per year for maize yield over that 25-year time period. You can see on the left the contribution of just changing the planting dates and keeping cultivars the same, very, very little change. If you look at the planting and cultivar together, it's about the same as just changing cultivars. So what we deducted from this research, that's really been the contribution has been dominated by a shift to longer season cultivars. So our number is 26%. I think you guys were at 35% or so for some of that. So it's nice to see different approaches coming to a somewhat similar conclusion in what's been contributing as far as the changing cultivars during this time period. And then my earlier statistical analysis said it was, you know, somewhere between 20 and 50%, and that was variability at the state level. This is averaged over the whole 12 states in the Corn Belt. This is just a little bit of a summary, a schematic of what we're seeing here. You've got earlier planting, changes in cultivars to a longer reproductive period. So the crop growth period starts earlier, but it's ending basically around the same time. But the longer reproductive period is what's allowing for this increase in yields in that 26%. And there's some other interesting things that are going on with that change between maturity and harvest that has to do with energy balance, which I didn't have time to include in the talk today, but you can read the paper there if you want to get the details. So I guess the challenge is to think about shifting crop calendars and whether or not this is able to build in resiliency to climate change. And these are just some of the ideas that I've discussed with other people, some of my own thoughts. But if we're shifting to earlier planting, it might put crop development at a time of year when temperatures remain cooler and there might be less soil moisture stress. So if we shift the entire crop calendar earlier and put the reproductive stage at a time when extreme heat and drought is least likely, could that be a benefit? You know, possibly. And maybe there's some places in the southern portions of the Corn Belt that might allow for double cropping to occur. I guess my advice when I talk with people about this, particularly the farming community, about weather variability and that, about, well, what kind of changes should they be making to adapt? I'm just like, be aware, maybe take advantage. You've already been doing this by adopting, you know, whether you want to admit that you've been adapting to changes maybe in planting or to climate. But plant cultivars that are adapted to longer seasons, which is already happening. And then the question that I have for the breeders, and I should probably just talk to the people in my own department since we have a lot of good people there, do like GCM projections give the plant breeders and geneticists the kind of weather details that they need when they're thinking about developing new varieties? It's something I'm not sure if the level of detail and realism in GCMs is there yet. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. So I just pulled out some interesting figures from a project that I'm leading in the watershed around Madison, where we're looking at future changes in climate and land use on ecosystem goods and services. And if you think about climate projections, on the left is what one particular set of climate models say about the change in onset of spring. This would just be a running 10-day mean temperature of 50 Fahrenheit, so corn germination temperature. So in Madison, this is for the Madison area, we may stand to gain, let's say, about 3 to 4 weeks of an earlier start to spring over the next 50 or 60 years. And then obviously you see the increase on the right of the growing season length by that's 160 days to maybe 200, like over a month. So, you know, will producers continue to push towards earlier planting? Will we continue to adopt, you know, new cultivars given the increases in growing degree days available? You know, these are things to be wondering about and with these projections. So I was really happy to see the discussion this morning, earlier this afternoon, about accumulated photosynthetic active radiation and how that could impact productivity. You have to keep in mind the synchrony right now between solar radiation and what the crop calendar is. If you think about, well, we'll just continue to plant earlier and earlier, and maybe we'll be planting crops in February or something in the Midwest somewhere down the line, you get completely out of sync with when solar radiation is at its highest intensity, which is at June 21st. So that's something to keep in mind. I guess I would challenge the modelers out there to take this into consideration, and let's do some simulations to show what the effects, you know, might be with such drastic changes. You know, plants would see changes in the exposure to day length, obviously, and if APAR increases, will crop water demands increase simultaneously? And then because I am an ecologist, not trained as an ecologist, but I do this work now, to think about how other large-scale processes and carbon, water, and energy and nutrient balance, how those might change as we shift crop calendars in the Midwest. And could those lead to feedbacks in the regional climate system due to water cycling, maybe unintended consequences for other ecosystem services? There's a good parallel going on right now, and studies are looking at what happens if we plant miscanthus all over the Midwest. We have Andy Van Lucke sitting here in the front who did some of these simulations and say, well, what's that going to do to water demands on crops? And the same thing could be applied to if we're going to shift crop calendars, if we're going to do double cropping. There's just some of these feedbacks that we have to be aware of that should expand our thinking beyond just thinking about the climate change adaptation. So here's a little teaser for you. Obviously, the work that we published only went through 2005. Over the weekend and all the free time I had, I thought, well, let's pull some data together. Let's pick on Iowa. I like Iowa. There's a lot of corn planted there, obviously. So I extended the trend through 2015. The slope of that line is minus 0.22 days per year. The original slope was minus 0.32 days per year. But as you know, with linear regression, it all depends on your starting and ending points. So what's happened in the last 20 years? Nothing. unfortunately. I don't know if this is good or bad, or if it's indication of things that Jerry Hatfield was waving his arms about extreme weather yesterday, about workable days in the field going down, and more. Ray Aird had a talk this morning about extreme precipitation events and when they're occurring. I'm wondering if Iowa here, as an example, is battling some changes in their weather that's preventing farmers from being able to continue that trend. The question is that going to continue in the long term or not? I mean, have we sort of reached the bottom and sort of picked the low-hanging fruit, so to speak, in advancing our planting dates? I don't know. So to conclude, just we've seen definite trends towards earlier planting of these summer crops. That's led to significant changes in the length of stages and growing degree day requirements, which has supported a change in cultivars. Looks to be responsible for about a quarter of the total maize yield trend in this analysis. Might be due to a mix of both changes in absorbed photosynthetic active radiation as well as agronomic advances. And the question is, will those trends continue? And because they've made a significant contribution thus far, if those trends suddenly disappear, how might we make up for that loss in yield gains moving forward? So I'm going to stop there and take any questions you might have. Thank you. I think to steal words from Jerry Hatfield is they're impatient. They want to get out earlier and complete activities. They want to get soybean, you know, in, which follows right after. There might be some people around here that have comments on that too, but I think it's just sort of mentality that producers have. Earlier is better. I don't know that for sure. The only familiarity I have with indemnities paid is in Dane County around Madison. Over the last 30 years, they've gone up exponentially. If you look at that and you look like, oh, that's hockey stick got written all over it, but it just might be more people signing up because of the perceived higher risk of both to drought and to excess water being around too. So that's what I know. Yeah, 2012, I think, resonates in everyone's mind, given, you know, what had happened. And I haven't done any of that myself. It's on the to-do list, and I'm not sure if people are very aware of that, if you extend earlier and earlier planting and you still have this extreme, you know, likelihood of getting that killing frost, we need to be paying attention. I don't know, though, of any trends in the changes of those or not, though. Yeah, we haven't looked at that. I think there's room, you know, to bring in some more of that sort of demographic type of data and sort of tease this down a little bit more. It would be great if we could get our hands on, easily get our hands on more than just the state level data. I mean, there is like, I think there's some district and maybe some smaller scale data available, but it's very, very hard to find unless someone else in the room knows how to extract that information. But it's hard to do things at the state level. It's good to generalize, but there's a lot more interesting stories probably embedded beyond that.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.